I love Sundays like this. I love Sundays when it's a special Sunday, like Sunday before New Year's, when it's not something that everybody's going to come to because of weather and because of family and all the celebrations going on, but you guys are here. You guys came. You guys want to be part of something that's coming here is going to be able to create for you, and I do too, and I wanted us to begin in the acknowledgement that all of us came here today, and not only to receive, but to be a presence, to be a gift, to be a part of a consciousness that is seeking to come forth, to be birthed, to be brought into this new year, and we're on the heels of celebrating the birth of Jesus. And Jane has done, and all of us together, as we've celebrated this through our number of different services, have really created a sense that, you know, we're here to celebrate the acknowledgement that the birth of Jesus represents the awakening of our own awareness of who and what we are and who and what we've come here to be. We are God in expression. Each one of us is like Jesus, except that he knew it from the beginning. He had Mary and Joseph as parents, and you know, we're still learning it. We're still getting the message of knowing our own worth. And so we metaphysically look at the holiday season and see that the birth of Jesus represents an awakening, an activation of our own conscious awareness of who we are and what we have come here to be and to express. And that is the difference that we can make in the world when we come from that place of love. And in the same sense, we are also doing another kind of celebration. The New Year baby also represents metaphysically the awakening of a dimension of ourself that is not tethered to anything in the past. Imagine having a part of yourself that's not tethered to anything that you've said or done, that you can welcome into your life and begin to grow that dimension of ourselves. Awaken that part of ourselves that's not tethered to any limitation or belief of less than or not good enough. I mean, to me, that requires of us the recognition that, you know, the new year represents symbolically, I mean, all of us all over are celebrating the new year everywhere, the recognition that we have an opportunity to reboot, to reset, to start over, to begin anew. There's something that is, you know, that it's integral to our well-being is to know that we can do that. We can step outside of our yesterday self and open ourselves to different possibilities, but we have to also know that in order for that new baby birth to happen, we have to nurture it. We have to do something other than just allow ourselves to be taken over by our yesterday self. I mean, when you think about it, you know, we all have this yearning to kind of be born anew, or at least bring forth a greater version of ourselves. And we commonly frame this intentionality in the context of our effort to resolve that which is keeping us away from the expression of our well-being and worth, you know, our issues, our challenges, our problems, the things that we find that are things that we would like to change about ourselves. And so we are collectively engaged in a recognition that this is an opportunity to bring forth a happy new me, a new version of myself. But yet at the same time, we also recognize the conundrum that this time of year, all the health clubs, they get increased memberships, all the dieting companies, they get all new kinds of members. And yet, after we make this earnest beginning, life tends to kind of run us over. And we have excuse, so we have rationale, we have reasons, we have stuff that gets in the way of our kind of following through with the effort to resolve to be better or to lose the weight or to quit this habit. And so we're kind of challenged in so far as entering into creating a new version of ourself, because it's in the context of managing the dynamic of how we're so plugged into our world that seems to create our own sense of dis-ease or distress. And then we end up wrestling with the outer conditions of our life, thinking that those conditions are withholding something from us. And if we are to acquire any modicum of well-being or worth from the effort of being different or showing up in a new way or altering how we are, we are in the effort to try to address something that we believe that is happening within us that's in the way of our receiving a greater good in our life. And we sometimes call that, you know, a resolution. I'm going to resolve to be different. So be honest now, how many of you have resolved to be different? How's it working for you? And isn't it true that sometimes the very efforts to kind of rein in a kind of a pattern in our life or behavior that we find not productive, that we may find ourselves succeeding only to find popping up somewhere else, a different kind of compulsion or a different kind of addiction or a different kind of fascination that draws us into a behavior that is habitual or a behavior that is meant to kind of give us a sense of feeling good about ourselves, but because there's such a depth of emptiness within, nothing that we do in the outer really resolves something that is really empty inside of us. And so it's not uncommon for us to see this time of year as an opportunity to one more time try to make the effort to address whatever it is that we believe is the problem within us. And so we have our New Year's resolution as an opportunity. But I want to begin by saying that whatever you have that you would like to get rid of, anybody have something that you'd like to get rid of? Let's be honest with it. So let's throw out some things that you'd like to be rid of. What are some examples of some compulsions, things that you might do that you wish you wouldn't do anymore? Sassiness.
Too busy.
Too busy, okay. So sassiness, too busy. What else?
Procrastination.
Wait. Anxiety. Wait. So how many of you have found yourself overeating ever? How many of you have gone into spending as a way of kind of offering yourself a little bit of well-being? Anybody do spending? So there's a number of ways in which we have behaviors that, while we recognize that there's really no long-term benefit in some of these compulsions that we have that drive us, we nonetheless feel badly within ourselves for doing those kinds of things. Is that not the truth? That underlying all of our compulsions, the things that we know aren't good for us, and even though we do those things anyway, we then in turn use those very situations to beat ourselves up. And then when we try to resolve that by doing a different behavior only to fail, we use that failure as evidence that we're not enough, that there's something wrong with us. This is the conundrum. Let's fix it, okay? Okay, so from now on, before we try to change any behavior that's connected to some discomfort that we're feeling within ourselves, before you try to change the behavior, you have to receive the gift of that compulsive behavior first. We're going to come back to this. Just put a bookmark here. I'm going to change the story, okay? But it's all going to be connected in the end. All right, we talked about this already. So Charles Eisenstein, he's an author, has written several books. One of the books that we've studied here, A Beautiful World That Our Heart Knows Is Possible, was one of the books that we talked about. He's written a book on climate change and sacred economics. What I love about Charles Eisenstein is he's able to articulate and create a container for the craziness in the world. He's able to explain what's really underlying the dynamics that are so stressful and hard for us to cope with as we bear witness it, as we bear witness to what's happening in the world in the context of our spiritual yearning to have the world be a better place. And he emphasizes that, in part of the challenge is that we're living in a story of separation. There's no reality of separation, but we live as if we're separate and apart from source, from each other, from the environment, and that belief that we're separate, the story that runs in the context of how we're having our life means that we live compelled to source our well-being and our discomfort outside of ourselves. That the dynamic of living in the story of separation means that we source outside of ourselves instead of within ourselves. And that phenomenon produces three habits of being. The first is the habit of struggle. This is according to Charles. The habit of struggle, the habit of lack, and the habit of judgment. And if you look at your life right now and what moves you into a place of discomfort, worry, or insufficiency, you'll see that it's connected to these struggles that live in the context of the story of separation. And so what if we were to really look more deeply at the ills that are existing that we struggle with and cope with as a society? And then as we look at our intent as spiritual beings to make a difference, what if we were to open ourselves to what that looks like to really get at the core of what the effort needs to be from within ourselves to translate into a better world that works for everybody? What would that look like? He has a 2-minute video to give us a sense.
Critics of conventional medicine are fond of pointing out that we address symptoms without really looking into the deep causes. And the same is true whether it's geopolitics or climate or pretty much any of the crises that afflict our civilization. We tend to look at the most proximate cause, which is also the most easily addressed because it doesn't go into a deeply systemic level. And we're now realizing that none of our solutions are deep enough. And that even when the solutions seem to succeed, we end up with a different version of the same thing. So what is the deeper cause? There have been many candidates, for example, capitalism, as the seed of all of our current dysfunction. And I've spent many years of my life trying to understand what is the origin of the wrongness. And now you can say that there's no wrongness, that it's all perfect, that it's all good, but that metaphysical theory didn't meet my visceral sense that it's not supposed to be this way. The world could be so much more beautiful. So the answer that I came to at one point was that the origin of all of this is a story and a self-perception, a way of seeing the world that you could call separation, that says that we are separate beings in a world of other. From that naturally comes competition. Naturally comes control, naturally comes domination. And we see the results all around us. Separation from nature, separation from each other, from lost parts of ourselves, and so on. I mean, yeah, it is the problem, but it's also a phase of a larger process that is coming into its fulfillment in our time.
So something's coming into fulfillment. Something's coming into fulfillment in our time. And so Charles Eisenstein, I saw on, as I was researching some ideas, that he believes that an age is coming to an end, and that the ending of the age is the end to the story of separation. We can no longer bring in a new year in the context of separation. We have to bring in our new year in the context of interbeing, our interconnection, our interdependency. We have to see ourselves larger than our isolated, small self. And as we do this, then we are in the question, okay, if the problem is the story, this pseudo-reality that we're separate and apart, if that's really the core issue, and if we were to end that story, if it's to change, if we were to actually do something that moves the needle to create a world that looks and feels a lot more in alignment with what we know is capable in our heart of hearts, then we really have to be addressing the core issue that is the kind of foundation of all the other issues, and that is, we are believing that we're separate. We believe that we're separate from God. And we believe that we're separate from each other. But yet, most importantly, we have parts of ourself that we are separated from. Aspects of our own self that we have pushed away. And so what I'm suggesting is that part of our effort to really address the core issue of why we're in this effort to improve ourselves or to transform ourselves or to make the world a better place begins with healing the separation of our own inner child, of the little boy or little girl within us. Because until that rift gets repaired, until we welcome all of our parts home and are able to recognize that those parts of ourself that have been disowned or otherwise pushed away have happened due to conditions and circumstances of our lives where we were ill-equipped to take on the experience without believing that it was about us instead of an experience that we've had to bring us into a greater demonstration of our well-being and worth. So I'm wanting us to think about our compulsions, the behaviors that we dislike, that we would cast a New Year's resolution or a spell to kind of rid ourselves from. I want us to begin to think of those dynamics as being connected to a part of ourself that is living in separation. And so, for instance, if you can just pick a compulsion, I'm going to pick a compulsion of mine. That I don't have right now, but that has followed me all of my adult life, and that is I had a compulsion to buy books. Anybody else have a compulsion to buy books? Oh my God, I'm not the only one. I've lived in this belief that I'm the only one, and thank you so much. It's already healed. Pardon me. And so maybe you can join the conversation. So I would use my credit card. I mean, that was the biggest invention that has kind of ruined the baby boomer generation. But I would use my credit card because I would feel not enough. I would feel like something's wrong. And so to buy a book and to feel like it represented who I was, I never read the books that I bought. But in the having of books, that's why it's a compulsive behavior. You see, a compulsive behavior, let's get it from the author of Compulsion, The Gift of Our Compulsions by Mary O'Malley. Remember, we studied a book also by this author called What's in the Way is the Way? Well, this is the book that preceded that book. And it's all about compulsions. And she says, to some degree, we are all compulsive. By compulsive, I mean engaging in reoccurring activity that eventually ends up managing us. So do you have behaviors in your life that are running you without your permission? Anybody? Raise your hand. It's just a fur ball. Cough it up. So So we have to recognize that the compulsions of our life didn't happen to us, we acquired them. And if you look at a compulsion, you'll see that you began in earnest way to bring into your experience something that gave you a sense that I'm okay, I'm worthy, I deserve this. Except that that became a pattern for me. Every time I started to feel awful about myself, I'd pull out the credit card and I'd buy something for myself. And it would give me a feeling of well-being. But then I'd feel really pissed off at myself that I would do such a thing. And so that's like peeing on your leg. I don't know where that came from. So let me continue here because we need to get to the end of this. So our compulsions. So for me, the buying of books to give me a sense that I was somebody. Look at what I know. Here's all my books. I would display them, and I wouldn't show them to anybody. They'd be displayed for myself. But I worked myself out of that habit because, as many of you know, it's not my inclination to read. That's not my medium of taking in information. And so it became an imperative for me to see, well, this doesn't make any sense. So I got rid of all my books. I got rid of every book. And I hadn't bought a book for 20 years. But I went into a different compulsion. I started using the credit card to get myself the things I wanted. Because now if I could have things that other people had, I could feel like I was included in something that was otherwise withheld from me. And I got to a place where I became quite indebted or in debt in that practice and ultimately had to address that compulsion. And so part of what Mary O'Malley suggests in terms of addressing compulsions is to recognize that all compulsions are connected to the little boy or little girl that's still hurting inside. Every single one. Whatever we are doing to address the discomfort that we experience in opening to our own self is connected to the little boy or little girl. Still. And until we make our way through the wormhole of finding that place in us that's connected to the very compulsive behavior that we're trying to free ourselves from, we can change the compulsion, but because we haven't addressed little Gary and little Gary's belief that he is not enough, I can go from buying books to buying electronics to food to whatever. I can just change the way in which I'm trying to resolve the emptiness inside of me, but little Gary is still living in not enough. So no diet is going to work. No program is necessarily going to fill the void. But as we begin to practice being in relationship with those aspects of ourself that we would otherwise push away, we don't want to feel this sense of inadequacy, this sense of I'm a disappointment, this sense that I don't matter. But what if we brought it in? And Mary O'Malley says, curiosity, you use a whole different circuit in your brain. It's not tethered to anything in your past. When you turn on the circuits of curiosity, you're entering into what could be called the weatherman's perspective. You know, when the weather person does the current conditions, they're not making up what the reality of the weather is. They're just simply reporting it. It's probably the only thing on TV that represents reality. The weather. No one can argue that this is what the weather is in the moment. So when we bring that same intentionality to the dynamic of our experience of, for instance, bless you, not enough, but yet be in the question, why am I making this mean that this is not enough? And we begin to bring that curiosity to the dynamic that we're having. And when I bring that part of my cognitive capacity to my own practice of being insufficient, my own commitment to having my life look insufficient, I ask the question, why am I doing that to myself? No one has a gun to my head or a knife to my throat. I am doing that to myself. And how is it possible that I do that to myself? Because little Gary is still living in the belief that he is not enough. And if I don't go down and meet little Gary where little Gary is, I don't get a chance to do what I need to do with little Gary that only I can do. And that is to pick little Gary up and with self-compassion, love that part of myself that has inadvertently believed that he was less than. That's not the truth. Inadvertently believed that he was not enough. That is not the truth. And so when we're able to recognize that my experience of lack in the outer is linked to that missing relationship, I stop trying to get more. Because there's no getting anything more when little Gary is in not enough. I have to start being more to little Gary. And then once I'm able to resolve that sense that I'm not enough, and then I bring that awareness to what I'm having, and it may look like there's not enough out there, but I use what's out there, because what's out there is my abundance, regardless of the story I'm making up about it. We can either experience our life as it really is, or we can experience our life through the story that we've made up about it. Only one approach is going to produce a shift in our consciousness and the capacity to be with what we're having and use it for a greater good. So I want to kind of conclude this by saying that Jane and I, we have this practice of when we drive, it's a 2-hour drive to Kettle Falls, 2 hours back, and so we read, she reads, I listen, and we have conversations. And so we've been reading Compulsions by Mary O'Malley this last week, and actually we spent Christmas Day night at our tiny home and talked about this at some length. But she says that when we are believing that our compulsions are against us, we practice as if they are like an enemy, and we become like a fighter, a soldier. And we try to vanquish the behaviors that cause us to feel ashamed or cause us to feel inadequate when we fail. And when we have that attitude that we have to fight against those dynamics in our life rather than to really look at them as ways in which we're going to be brought into a dynamic relationship within our own integration, until we are able to shift that, we have to begin to understand that there's a distinction between being a soldier and fighting an enemy and being a warrior that needs noble adversaries. The way of the peaceful warrior welcomes noble adversaries because it is the adversary that hones a warrior's craft. We need the conditions of our life to bring us into ownership and our full power to be the one unto our own life and to make a difference in our world. And until we are able to shift that dynamic with the compulsions in our life and really see those compulsions as being opportunities to discover the little boy or little girl in the midst of their own isolation and separation, we begin to heal the story, the stories that we tell in our lives. All you have to do is listen to your stories that you tell, and you'll see where you're living. You're living in the story of separation when you talk about how your life is against you or who's the matter with you. But when you live in the story of your oneness and connection and inner being, you still have problems, but they're not against you. You still have challenges, but they bring you into a greater intentionality that brings you into an expression of new gifts and ways in which you can be. So as we look at the new year and see that part of our effort as a spiritual community, as we seek to create an energetic field that in the field itself can become a container for transformation, for integration, for healing, for our experiencing awakening, for our experiencing the gifts of spirit, if we can see that we're creating this energetic field that enables that to be what is given unto us because we know that that's the reality that we can welcome into our life, then we will find that, yes, while we have compulsions, you know, I can go into great detail with mine, but I don't feel bad about myself when I recognize that this is something that's connected to a part of me that I need to welcome. Now, Mary O'Malley, I'll just end with this, says that it's not our intent to try to rid ourselves of all compulsion. It's our intent to rid ourselves of all the ways in which we have our life against us and begin to see the truth of who we are and recognize that we have to have experiences that hone our craft, hone our capacity to be the one to make the difference. I really, really, really glad that we all showed up today. God bless you. Thank you.